We bring you now an address for the Honorable John G. Alexander, representative from Minnesota. Congressman Alexander speaks on the subject, Will We Keep Out of War? Congressman Alexander.
Thank you and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. On Thursday night of last week, in a broadcast over another network, I presented a poem which has been dedicated by its author, Herman Hagedorn, to the millions of youth who were killed and wounded in the First World War. A part of that remarkable, soul-stirring poem reads like this. We are your sons and we are ghosts. We came to love, to labor, and to know. We died before we loved, before we learned to labor, before we knew more than the twice-told tales you murmured to beguile our puzzled ears. You cried across the world and called us sons. We came as sons, but what you made of us were bleeding shapes upon an altar, slain to appease your god, inertia, where he sits muttering dead words and chewing at old bones, because you would not think we had to die. We have been loyal, we have fought for you, and suffered of the cold, and starved for you, and miserably laid our bodies down before your idol, while the incense rose. Weep not for us, but for your own trapped selves. We died, and there you stand no step advanced. And after all, when you have set more millions beside our millions, and beside them yet more millions of brave fellows who die well, you still will have to wake someday and think. You will let many die ere you do that, and yet the day will come. My friends, has it ever occurred to you that, as the poet says, our God is inertia? Has it ever occurred to you that the reason why war is sweeping the earth and is about ready to engulf even this nation and its citizens is because we have been sitting idly by while the war machine has rapidly developed? In 1931, Manchuria and China, where were you and what were you doing for peace? Since then, war has grown visibly, month by month and year by year, through a chain of similar developments, all of which we could have headed off had we been wise and active in the cause of peace, instead of sitting idly by, not knowing what to do, nor caring to know. Yes, the poet has described us exactly. Inertia is our God. Furthermore, is he not right when he says, you still will have to wake someday and think, you will let many die ere you do that, and yet the day will come. On October 4th, I made some remarks in the House of Representatives entitled Prepare for Peace, which, judging from the scores of letters I have received, have been widely read all over the nation. These remarks were in support of House Joint Resolution 610, which is now before the Foreign Affairs Committee, and which calls for an appropriation by our government for the purpose of promoting and preparing for peace. Something new, isn't it? Have you ever heard of a cent being provided directly for that purpose? This year, Congress has appropriated approximately $17 billion for national defense, preparedness, and preparation for war. That is an average appropriation per day for every day this year up to this date of about $50 million. My contention is that we should set aside one of these one-day appropriations for the purpose of promoting and preparing for peace in non-military ways, instead of all for military ways as we are doing. As evidence that it is a waste of time and money to spend everything as we are doing for military preparedness for the war today, let me read two paragraphs from a statement by Edith Winner, representing the Committee on World Government before the Resolutions Committee of the Republican National Convention at Philadelphia last June. I quote, this committee has found that the helicopter being perfected by Sikorsky is capable of rising vertically from almost anywhere, of remaining in the air over one spot for prolonged periods, and particularly of being especially suited to fast, cheap, mass production. In fact, it will be the Model T of the air, and will make possible in the very near future invasion from the air on a large scale. Even more revolutionary from the standpoint of the hopelessness of the defense problem by military means is the discovery by a Swedish scientist some weeks ago of a cheap commercial method of extracting uranium. Germany is rich in uranium deposits. A chunk of uranium supplied with water in a boiler will generate enough steam to equal the power of approximately 65,000 gallons of gasoline, which is more than the total gas used normally by most men in their entire lifetime. In effect, this revolutionary discovery will make unnecessary far-flung naval and aeroplane bases. Refueling, except with water, of which there is plenty in the oceans, will be unnecessary. Uranium will bring every part of the world within striking distance of every other part. Almost any day, any moment, scientists may be hitting upon even more revolutionary discoveries, as you know. So where does that leave our preparedness? Apparently about where we started in before we spent our first $17 billion. Can't you see, my friends, that we have to proceed on a more sane and intelligent basis? These facts make the resolution, referred to a moment ago, of considerable importance at this time. That resolution provides in part as follows, I quote, "Resolved that the President be, and he hereby is, instructed to take immediate joint action with all possible like-minded governments of nations not at war in offering their services openly and publicly to the belligerents in the cause of peace, and be further resolved that, in order to satisfy the longing for peace of all the peoples of the world, a cessation of all hostilities under joint neutral supervision should be openly demanded, and at the same time, the actual extension of the system of federation into a world union of nations should be offered and pledged to the belligerents by the joint neutrals as the only practical means of readjusting the status of newly conquered nations or long-held colonies and dominions, of underprivileged or overprivileged states, and permitting mankind to build a new and better civilization in safety without fear of war and organized destruction. Therefore, be it resolved that, in order to finance the above-described program of joint neutral efforts for the present and future of the world, the House of Representatives, the Senate concurring, hereby appropriates $50 million as our safest and least costly defense." End of quotation. But in order to work out a program of preparation for peace, we would have to get rid of our God inertia and do some individual thinking beforehand. For if there is no adequate study and preparation for a just and lasting peace, we will never find it any more than we did in 1919 at Versailles. Peace, like everything else worthwhile, must be prepared, must be purchased at a price. It is probable that the price would not be anywhere near $17 billion if we went at it in the right way. And furthermore, my advice is not to settle back in your easy chairs and be too sure that this $17 billion for preparedness will keep us out of war. I will let you in on a little secret. To many people to whom I have talked, this expenditure is the clearest evidence needed to prove that we are already in the war in a polite, modern, up-to-date way without ever having asked Congress to declare war, except by way of the voting of this appropriation and by way of the revision of the Neutrality Act and also by way of the conscription law. Will we keep out of war? We would show great wisdom if we do and would save a lot of money. Someone has figured it out that it cost about 75 cents to commit legal murder of a man by war in Caesar's time, $3,000 per man a few hundred years later when Napoleon was at it, $5,000 in our Civil War, and then the price rose to $21,000 per man in the World War. But estimates for the present war indicate that it may cost the warring nations not less than $50,000 for each man killed. Now shall we, the people in America, demand that Congress appropriate by adopting House Joint Resolution 610 what it costs to kill 1,000 men and thus save millions of men, women, and children? Or shall we just let our great God inertia take complete charge of us so that we do nothing but sit idle while the war machine overwhelms us? At the price set in this resolution, in order to start a program to promote peace, if it were used for war, it would kill 1,000 at present rates, but it might save millions if spent for peace. Some of you may be asking, well, just what would you do with $50 million to promote peace? I think that's a fair question. Three things definitely should be done. First, we should have a great, honest, open-minded debate with every possible person in the world taking part, discussing the reconstruction of the world for peace and for living. It is evident that a formula providing security for the English and French and removing the specter of starvation for the Germans, Italians, and others is a man-sized job well worthy of the prayerful consideration by debate and otherwise of every last one of us capable of thinking. Secondly, we should gather together and finance all the peace groups and useful individuals in every neutral country in order to set them to work at the task of developing and organizing a peace conference. And thirdly, we should use our fund to cloak with authority and to send the best trained and most capable peace salesmen and women into the capitals and principal cities of every important warring nation in order to encourage peaceful and like-minded citizens there to organize and develop sentiment for and to attend such a peace conference. There are many other things which should be done, but were we to start with only these three that I have enumerated, think what an inexhaustible reservoir of new help and strength, spiritual and otherwise, we would unseal. If I am not mistaken, the world is waiting for this, for the leadership it now seems so sadly to lack. That is why there is such chaos. That is why such misfit leaders as Hitler, Mussolini, Stalin, and our Jap militarists can take charge of things. That is why we are so fearful that we may lose this world contest now being waged. Isn't Hitler's and all the others' idea and program aimed at organizing the world in their way? Sure it is, and you know it. And still we, the great United States of America, sit idly by and wait while they act. If I am not mistaken, what we need to do to save both ourselves and all other real values is to take the leadership away from such war makers. According to news dispatches, little Sweden and poor Portugal are making moves for peace. Why aren't we? I am sure you are for peace, but we must organize the world for peace as the antidote for organizing the world for war, as is being done. This means some concretely defined ideals for world government, such as the United States of the world. For our debates, which I indicated we should be doing right now in every hamlet, every pulpit, school and forum, in every home, in fact, we should be talking about America's new order for the world. We should be studying and discussing what to do about a world postage, a world money, credit, raw materials, a world language, immigration and overpopulated areas, also underdeveloped areas, food surpluses, famines, a world court for the settlement of disputes between nations, a world Congress like our United States Congress here in Washington, a world educational system. Do you believe in a universal God, in the brotherhood of man? If so, then aren't these your problems to solve to prove your belief and faith? If you want to hear more about these problems, tune in to another great network tomorrow night when I plan to discuss the subject, What Are We Fighting Over? And in the meantime, don't forget, we need to prepare for peace. Urge the Honorable Saul Bloom, Chairman, and other members of the House Foreign Affairs Committee to act at once on House Joint Resolution 610. I thank you.
From Washington, you have just heard an address by Representative John G. Alexander of Minnesota. Will We Keep Out of War? Was the subject of Congressman Alexander's talk. This is the National Broadcasting Company.